Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the National MS Society's Below the Belt, Bladder, and Bowel Issues in MS conference call. Your host, Ms. Amy Watkins, will now begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good evening. This is Amy Watkins from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and I welcome you to tonight's teleconference, Below the Belt, Bladder, and Bowel Issues in MS. Our speaker tonight is Christine St. Laurent, or Lauren, I'm sorry, Christine, if I have that. I'm mispronouncing. I should know by now. She's an MS certified nurse and former clinical nurse coordinator at the MS Center at Sturdy Memorial Hospital in Attleboro, Mass. Christine will address common bladder and bowel issues that can arise in MS and ways to treat and cope with them. Participants will have an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. The operator will instruct you on how to do this when it's time. Please be aware that this call is being recorded and will be available on our website. If you wish to ask your question anonymously, you may do so. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Christine. I will now turn the call over to you.
Thank you, Amy. And I'd like to thank the MS Society for asking me to do this, to talk about these very important and somewhat delicate issues to a lot of people. I also want to just give a quick thanks to the many nurses that I've worked with over the years who've, you know, taught me and shared their ideas and their experience from practice. I'm hoping that we can go through the slide presentation rather quickly but thoroughly so that we can then move forward to answer your questions. Some people have submitted questions ahead of time, and some of them I will actually be addressing throughout the content of the program. So bowel and bladder issues in MS are very common. About 80% of people during the course of their disease will experience some sort of bladder dysfunction, while 60% of people on average will experience bowel dysfunction. Now, this can be periodic or it can be chronic, where that it happens once it starts, it's kind of like, you know, the rolling rock. Once it gets momentum, it may get worse or it may just stay the same. And they can occur at any point in the disease. However, by and large, the longer the person lives with MS, the likelihood of experiencing bowel and bladder issues increases. It is an occasional person that they say about 10% of people in general will have urinary symptoms as one of the initial symptoms of the disease. Although in my practice I've seen it on occasion, it is very, very unusual. It's very important that bowel and bladder are kind of tied together, although we could talk probably a whole evening about one or the other. It's very common that once a person has issues with one of these systems, they tend to have issues with another system, probably because of the demyelination that may be occurring along the spinal tract, and that is feeding both of those areas or innervating both of those areas. And so you tend to see them occurring very often simultaneously, and dysfunction in one can worsen or can cause actually difficulty to varying degrees in the other system. Management of both bowel and bladder dysfunction mainly comes from experience and from practice. There has been some research in it, predominantly in spinal cord injury patients, but most of what we do in the practice setting has come from learned experience. And these are good established practices that most providers use. At times, though, to you, it may seem like, you know, you're being subjected to trial and error because there's a whole list of management techniques that we employ, and very often it is kind of ticking off the list, you know, trying the least aggressive first and working down to see what is unique that is going to help your issues. I want to look for just a quick minute at the bladder. I'm sure that you probably now, if you've had any bladder issues, you've probably seen a picture of the bladder, but I just threw one in there just in case you hadn't. the bladder is a very muscular structure. It's a bag-like collapsible structure, and its function really is to store urine, and when it's full or when we're ready, it then is to expel the urine through the urethra. The control of the bladder, as I said, is exerted by both the brain and the spinal cord, and both of these areas with demyelination can be impacted with MS, and therefore you can have problems, a functional problem.
Can you hear me, Christine?
Yes, I can. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm supposed to be muted. My bad.
Sorry.
It's
okay.
My
job. Okay. So in general, how does the bladder work? The bladder, as I said, is a very simplistic muscular organ. You know, it has two primary functions. It's storage and emptying. So with the relaxation of the bladder muscle, the bladder begins to fill, okay? The ureters send urine from the kidneys into the bladder, and the sphincter muscles and the urethra keep it there. And they contract, and that's what's holding the urine up. When it's time for that urine to be expelled, what should happen is the muscle wall of the bladder should contract, and then the sphincter at the top of the urethra, which is the outside opening of the urinary system, should relax. So it should be a coordinated effort. So you already start to think a problem along any of these issues is what's going to cause these simple functions is what's going to cause urinary problems. The International Continence Society, yes, there is an actual International Continence Society, defines incontinence as the involuntary loss of urine. It affects about 13 million Americans, so it is a very common issue, whether you have MS or not. One-third of women over the age of 65, because of a lot of influences, will experience urinary incontinence. However, there is a misconception that it's kind of a, you know, we're all going to get it as we age, and it really is not a normal part of aging. But we do know that the tendency to experience incontinence does increase with age. This list is kind of, I'm going to just go over it quickly, because when we talk about urinary problems, it depends who you're talking to, kind of what terminology they use. There are a lot of various terms that really describe the basic problems. You know, there are really three basic issues with the bladder. It's either a bladder filling problem, okay, it's a bladder emptying problem, or it's the combination of the two. But we use a lot of other terms when we talk about incontinence. One of them is urge incontinence. Well, urge incontinence is when you feel, you know, it's that I gotta go feeling. You know, that urge, you feel like you'd go that minute. You know, there's little forewarning, and you need to be at the bathroom. Stress incontinence. Women talk about this a lot. This is one of the more common issues that women, as they age, also dependent upon how much abdominal weight they carry and how many children they may have carried through their life, that the pelvic muscles get weakened is one of the issues. And so when they are doing any type of exercise that involves impact, like running, jogging, sneezing, coughing, laughing, they will leak out a little bit urine. Another kind descriptor of incontinence is overflow incontinence. And what happens with that is that's really an emptying problem. So the bladder gets so full, and for some reason, you know, either the bladder is not getting the message to contract, or the bladder may be getting that message to contract, but the sphincter is not opening, so therefore allowing the urine to go out. So now you've got this overextended bladder. It's full, and it's like a cup. You know, once it's overflow, you know, it's going to overflow. Slowly, a little bit will spill out. okay? And mixed incontinence, which I have already described, is the combination of the two. So with that urge incontinence, this is, I think, one of the more common things that people with MS would come into my practice complaining about. Now, this is, as I said, an inability to store problem. So the person has urgency, frequency. They very, they find that they may be getting up during the night. Their bladder is very, very spastic. They may feel like they've got to go all the time. And then, as I said, we have the inability to empty. Now, again, this person, urgency is not so much a criteria. They may feel like they have to go to the bathroom, but what happens is when they're in the bathroom, then it doesn't feel like it wants to come out. You know, it's that, oh, you know, you feel like you have to rush in there. You sit down on the toilet or you stand up to void if you're a male, and there's that hesitancy. It just does not want to come out. Or you go and you no sooner pulling up your pants and you feel like, oh, I got to go again, because you're not fully emptying your bladder. So the message continues to get sent that there is urine still sitting in the bladder. And the problem with this is because when urine sits there, it increases your chance of infection. So with a spastic bladder, we tend to use medications that are going to slow the bladder, that message being sent, decreases the transmission of the nerve that says, you know, I've got to go to the bathroom. It's time to empty my bladder. So it wants to slow the time between those messages being sent. We usually use anticholinergic medications, and probably a lot of you have been on. There's six right now commonly used on the market. But still, Detrol is probably one of the most common ones that people use. Because it's relatively inexpensive compared to some of the others. I mean, I'm not here to advocate one medication over another, and very often if one doesn't work, it may be worthwhile taking a trial with another one. And what happens with this is that when you take the medication, hopefully you'll have that lengthening between the time of when you're going to urinate. Okay. We also need to really talk, however, about some good bladder health as well, because sometimes in addressing any of these problems, that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And we will talk on that after we go through a couple more slides, because it really impacts no matter what your bladder issue is. I did want to mention Botox because in November, I believe, of 2011, Botox was approved for the treatment of overactive bladder in patients with MS specifically, neurological disease and MS specifically. It does, however, require a consultation with a urologist. It's not something that's going to be handled in a MS practice, even a MS center of specialized care, unless they have a urologist or a gyno-urologist on staff. I have a slide out of order because I want to talk a little bit more about Botox right now, and then you can see that it's in one of the later slides, and then I'll skip it when we come up to it. Now, the thing with Botox, you must have been unable to tolerate the anticholinergic medicines that I talked about, or had an inadequate response for it to be approved. But other than that, it has had very good approval track record. I know I can only speak to, you know, I spoke to the company representative, and, you know, he covered, like, Massachusetts and Rhode Island, but I believe that it's nationwide. It's manufactured by Allergan, and they do have a patient assistance program for people. And, you know, you can go on their website and find out more about it if it's something you're interested in. It is, as I said, it covered by most insurance plans. But the thing to remember, if you're, you know, thinking about this in the future, is that very often people, it was shown in the study to be true as well, people, once they started using Botox, if they had not already been using intermittent self-catheterization, they may need to, and they may need to do it more frequently than they had in the past. And there is an increased chance of urinary tract infection, and that was shown in the data that was presented when it was approved by the FDA, and I believe that has continued in post-marketing of the medication. So just some things to be aware of. Now, a flaccid bladder is that bladder that is just filling, and just does not want to empty. You know, it's even not contracting, and so that it's the urine is just sitting there. And what we're concerned, as I have already said, is we're concerned about that urine and the increased risk for infection. And it doesn't have to be just, you know, a full bladder. People may still be going to the bathroom. I don't mean to give that visual. You know, you might go, but you just never fully empty. So every time there's like a little bit left there. And again, that may increase the feeling like you always have to go. And so it's kind of confusing, you know, what exactly is happening with the bladder. And you can see if a person is retaining urine, you know, by doing a bladder scan. A lot of MS practices do them right in their office. And so what you would do is it's a very simple test. You have the person go to the bathroom, empty their bladder as best they can, and then they come back and you just do an ultrasound to see how much urine is in the bladder, and then you have parameters of when you want to intervene and when a person really should start with intermittent self-catheterization. Now, dyssynergia is, as I talked about, this is the mixed bag. This is when you're getting the discoordination. The bladder muscle is saying, okay, it's contracting, let me empty, and the sphincter, which should open up, relax, so that the urine can then flow out through the urethra, is staying shut. So it's that combination. They don't work in synergy, and that can be a problem. And very often, that can be addressed by some of the techniques we use with normal use in bladder management. Nocturia, again, it's not a special thing, but it's a term that we often use, and so I wanted to just talk about it for a minute. Nocturia is that getting up to void during the night. I know our tolerance level was, if people were getting up once during the night, we weren't like raising our arms, you know, unless the person was concerned about it. Getting up once, it can be habitual or it can be a bladder issue. It can be usually you can stop drinking fluids a little bit earlier in the evening, and there are some things you can do to kind of avoid the habit that's been created. But once you start getting up more than once a night, then you've got a disturbed sleep pattern, and then you feel lousy, and then your MS fatigue is worse, and you know, it just becomes such a cyclic event. You know, if a person is getting up more than once a night to void, it really does need some sort of intervention. There is one medication on the market, DDAVP. Now, it's used very judiciously. It's actually used sometimes with children as a nasal spray for bedwetting. And we would prescribe it in our practice on occasion for people in the evening, and it decreases urine production at night. However, you have to be very careful. You have to make sure that the person has good, you know, kidney function and all that kind of stuff. But there is one medication that specifically speaks to decreasing the amount of urine that you produce during the night. So bladder management in general, this is the most important part, I think, of what we're going to talk about. The first thing I have on the list is evaluation by a urologist. And that does not always happen. I have to be perfectly honest. In the MS world, by and large, most MS providers who have had years of experience of handling bladder issues will at first try to work with the patient on these issues to see if they can manage it within the realm of the practice. Because usually the last thing that a person wants to do that has MS is, one, have another medication, and two, is see another specialist. And I think that most MS providers are very capable, it's been my experience, in handling the first line of treatment for bladder. One of the things that's very helpful, and I know it's time-consuming, and some people probably will roll their eyes as soon as I say it, is keeping a bladder diary. And this is for bowels and bladder, actually, keeping an elimination diary for at least 3 days in a week, probably not three consecutive days, because if you don't feel good one day, you might, you know, but maybe 3 days in a week to kind of get a sampling for a few weeks. And in that bladder diary, you want to put down, you know, bowel diary, you want to put down your elimination habits. When you go, if you feel like you've emptied, was there anything that brought it on? Did anything seem to make it worse? That type of thing. What time of the day you're having bladder accidents, if you are having bladder incontinence. All those type of things. And that can be very helpful for the provider and you to come up with a plan of action. Another thing that's important in bladder management and also, again, in bowel management is adequate fluid intake. Because what do we all do? Once we start having the fear that we may have to go to the bathroom when we're somewhere where there's no bathroom, is we stop drinking. I have MS patients that, you know, in the past that I cared for that wouldn't drink all day at work because, you know, they didn't have a position where they could just get up and go to the bathroom whenever they wanted to, and their fear of having that need to go to the bathroom was so great and not making it, they would just stop drinking. And that is really bad for your bladder. It's bad for your bladder. It's bad for your bowels. It's bad for your general health. It is going to increase the chance of you getting an infection because what little urine you have is just going to sit in your bladder because your bladder is not going to feel full and you're not going to get that urge to void. So, I mean, it's really something to consider. I did hear a urologist speak once, and it was very interesting because she talked about drinking adequately, but drinking with purpose, because she said we've become a society that sits with water bottles. I have one sitting on my desk right now as I speak. And she said, for someone who has that spastic bladder, who feels that, you know, feels that urge frequently, if not all the time, like they could get up and pee whenever. She said, think about just constantly adding a little bit of urine at a time, you know, just like you're drinking water, a sip here, a sip there, a sip. And she said she feels that that encourages, not encourages, but kind of adds to that urge problem. And she feels that people are better served by having a drink and getting it over with, you know. You have a glass of water and you finish it and then you wait. You know, you don't have to time yourself. I'm not saying that, but, you know, periodically drink, but drink with purpose. And I thought that was an interesting concept, and I'd never heard that expressed before, and it kind of intellectually makes sense to me. Another thing in bladder management is that you really need to avoid bladder irritants. Caffeine is an irritant, whether we, you know, we love our morning coffee, and I'm not telling anyone to give up their morning coffee, but it is an irritant. Spicy food, citrus products can be irritant, and that, again, is something that you might find particular foods that are irritating for you after you keep a bladder diary. You might find that, you know, when you have red sauce on your pasta, it's your bladder's more irritated. Chocolate may be irritating to you. So, you know, a killer meal may be pasta with red sauce, glass of red wine, and chocolate cake for dessert, you know, and then you may have real issues. So it may be more judicious to space those irritating foods out. The use of medications, which I've talked about, and that's really driven by practice. You know, providers tend to have their favorites. You know, they start with one and see if it works type thing. The problem with these medications, they do tend to make people have dry mouth, and they can be constipating. So for people that have those combination bowel and bladder issues, we need to be aware of that. And then use an intermittent self-catheterization, which is, you know, people can be taught to do it to themselves in their home. It's very quick. You empty the bladder. Most people do it, you know, maybe four times a day is about the average. And then some people just may do it. I have some people where getting up during the night was the main issue. That was when, you know, the bladder seemed to really act up the most. And so maybe just catheterizing themselves before they go to bed to make sure that the bladder is empty can keep them to sleeping through the night, or maybe only getting up that once a night type of thing. So at first, people can be very resistive to talking about self-catheterizing, but once they've done it and see how much more freedom they may have in their life. I like to tell this story, and that I was at an MS event once, and I went into the bathroom at the same time with a person with MS whom I happen to know, you know, catheterizes himself. That, you know, they do intermittent self-catheterization all the time, and we went into the stalls at the same time. She came out before me. So, you know, once you know what you're doing, it's quick. You just go in, you do it, and, you know, and it's a clean procedure. It's not a big sterile thing. It's a clean procedure. You know, hands are clean, your equipment's clean, and it's very effective. And a lot of people feel like they get their life back once they start doing it. Okay, next we're going to go on to bowel dysfunction. Bowel dysfunction doesn't have as much parameters to talk about, but it's still just as important. And it's still, I don't know, sometimes I think it's even more delicate discussion, talking about someone's bowel and their bowel elimination habits with them. It's very hard for people to bring up on their own. Unless we as providers ask about it, it can be something that's very difficult for them to initiate the conversation. Bowel dysfunction, again, is caused by demyelination along that pathway, very often along the spinal tract, that causes the contraction, the lower contraction, and the release of the sphincter, the external sphincter, which allows the stool or the feces to come out. Another big factor is weakened abdominal muscles. And actually, it's interesting that one of the questions I got sent to me was, can exercise improve your bowel function? And in some ways, yes, exercise can very much improve your bowel function. Again, it's not a one thing that's going to be the cure, I don't think, but having a good, strong core muscle so that, you know, as people become weaker or more sedentary and they don't have a weak core, they have more difficulty bearing down and therefore expelling the feces, you know, totally evacuating the bowel. And so that can be very important. And also, as we are more sedentary, our peristalsis, which is the movement of the fecal matter along the bowel, slows down. The slower we are in our actions, the slower the bowel is, and that leads to constipation. The longer the stool stays in the bowel, the harder it gets, because the longer it's in the bowel, more water in the external portion, the end of the bowel tract, more water is reabsorbed the longer it sits there, and then it's going to get hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it gets like cement. So another common cause of bowel problem is medication side effects. I already mentioned the anticholinergics that we used for bladder dysfunction causing slowing of the bowel. Antispasmodic medications like baclofen that work on the striated muscles can also have some function, some effect on the bowel, and therefore can worsen constipation. So it's, I'm not telling you you don't take your baclofen, but it's something that, you know, you need to be aware of. Or maybe you're not having real constipation problems yet, and you know you're on baclofen, and you say, oh, maybe I should be aware of this. Maybe I should make sure that I am eating properly. I am having my adequate fluid so I don't get into the issue of having bowel problems. And then decreased activity, which I already mentioned in correlation with the weakened core of the body and inadequate fluid and dietary bulk. So what? How do we manage the bowel? What happens is that feces moves into the lower bowel, and the sphincter, the external sphincter at the anus, is shut. And as the lower bowel becomes full, so to speak, the muscles contract. You know, it's that fullness that tells the muscles, okay, it's time to contract. They contract, and again, you need that synergy. As they contract, the external sphincter needs to relax to open up so that the feces that then can be expelled from the body. So more commonly we see is constipation, and that's good because constipation is easier to manage. I'd say about 60% of the time the issue is constipation, and occasionally the problem is loss of bowel control. People call it fecal incontinence, and it is much less common. However, a lot of the same techniques that we use for one works for the other. So in general, for bowel management, we want to, again, look at our diet, looking for things that may either slow the bowel down, things that are constipating in nature. And again, you know, I can say cheese and bananas, things that, you know, are commonplace. But you need to know what slows your bowel down as opposed to what is unique to my body. And then we also have things that seem to make the bowel evacuate more quickly. You know, for some people it's any type of like undigestible roughage like lettuce, things that we pretty much pass through the system pretty much undigested. It may be, again, caffeine. You know, a lot of people find that, you know, they get up in the morning, they have their cup of coffee, and that caffeine is enough that between the warmth and the caffeine, it's enough to stimulate the bowel so that they have their daily evacuation. So to be aware of what you're eating and how it impacts your bowel, and that can be useful, too, for just like that, you know, if caffeine helps you, you know, having that cup of coffee on an empty stomach might help you better evacuate. Having enough fluid intake, which I've said, the recommendation in general tends to be 20 to 30 grams of fiber per day. Now, that's a little bit debatable because fiber doesn't work for everybody, to be honest with you. It's really something we toad a lot, and fiber has a lot of good other uses. Is important for other functions of our bodies as well. But people should be getting at least a minimum of 15 grams of fiber a day. And then you want to work up to that 20 to 30. If see if it helps by increasing the fiber, and you do want to increase it slowly because it can create a lot of gas, bloating, feelings of uncomfortableness. It's very important when you're making changes, especially for the bowel habits. It takes a good 2 to 3 weeks usually for you to see, really, is this going to help or is it not going to help, how much exactly it's going to benefit you. So you don't want to be changing like 5 things at once, and it's a really slow-go approach. It's important to know that peristaltic activity, that movement, those wave-like movements that push the food through the system is increased after a warm meal or beverage. That's important for timing because that's when most people will be able to go to the bathroom because they've already got that peristalsis working for them. And the last is actually from a nurse colleague, and it is a pun, haste does not make waste, but it's very, very true. You know, we've become such a busy, busy, rushed society, and we have to find time. You know, establishing a good bowel routine may take time. Timing is essential. And if you're, you know, rushing out of the house in the morning with a cup of coffee and you don't even have time to, you know, look in the mirror to make sure your clothes are on straight, you definitely probably don't have time to go and sit in the toilet for 5-10 minutes. And I'm not saying, you know, you want to sit there with a book for a half hour. We don't want you doing that either, but you do need to give yourself time. Constipation, by and large, does respond to these bowel management techniques. And as I said, you have to give it time, though. It's important also to know that constipation, being constipated, will impact any waste down symptoms that you may be having. So if you, if I had somebody who called me and said, you know, I don't know, last couple of days, all of a sudden my spasticity is so much worse. One of the things that I would be asking, you know, asking about infection, you know, I also would be asking, are you constipated? Because that can make your spasticity worse. So it's an important issue. Also, if you're constipated, it can make your bladder worse because you're going to have that fullness in your lower pelvic, and it's very likely that it's going to cause more urgency in your bladder. And it also may cause you not to totally empty your bladder as well either. So some of the things after adding, you know, we normally would start, you know, first adding fiber and water to someone's diet. That would be our first step. Starting point, and looking at finding a time for evacuation, what their normal habit would be. You know, we tend to want everyone to move their bowels every day, and I think that is the ideal, but we definitely don't want people going more than every 3 days. And if someone comes in to me and starts the conversation by saying, well, you know, I never move my bowels more than once every 5 days, I'd say, well, this probably isn't an MS-related problem. This is probably an issue that's been going on long before that. And there's definitely many cases where a person should see a gastroenterologist and explore the issue more. We also, as like then a second line of treatment, would consider suppositories, glycerin suppositories, and digital stimulation, which it's kind of iffy because you got to be careful. The person needs to know what they're doing. They insert their finger into the rectum, and you want to make sure that they're not doing it too much or too aggressively. You don't want to cause themselves to bleed. And some use of natural laxatives like senna is very common as a first-line treatment. It's important when you're using suppositories. I just want to express this while I'm thinking of it because it's a common mistake that people make. When you're using a suppository, it's important to try to get the suppository against the wall of the rectum rather than in the stool, especially if that stool is very, very hard, because you want it to get into the rectum, the mucosa, the lining of the rectum for it to be absorbed. Suppositories usually are one of the first lines of treatment because it's not systemically absorbed, so you're not causing other problems. Other things that you may be seeing, belt formers, you know, these are things that add substance to the stool, like Metamucil, Perdiem, Fibrocon, you know, all the preparations you see over the counter. The thing is, they have to be taken every day, and they're not effective right away. So if chronic constipation especially is an issue, this might not be as good a solution because it's really not going to make your life more manageable. You know, people want to go to the bathroom, or if they have to take a suppository or an enema, they want to go in, utilize it, and then be done with it. They don't want to be wondering when it's going to work, when it's going to happen, when they're going to evacuate the bowel. Stool softeners, I think most people that have chronic constipation should use a stool softener, even if they're using something else to evacuate the bowel, because it causes increased water into this so that the stool remains softer for evacuation. And those are taken on a daily basis. Laxatives are something that I very much discourage using on a regular basis because they're a chemical irritant. Milk of magnesia is like one of the less caustic ones, so people may use that a little bit more regularly. But, you know, I'm talking about people where constipation is a chronic issue, so we want to use techniques to manage it that are the less invasive or the least harsh to their system. Suppositories can be used on a regular basis, glycerin suppositories, Ducalox suppositories, and they can usually, for most people, will work within 15 to 20 minutes if they're placed right, but for not all people. And again, you know, when I first started in MS care, I thought, oh, boy, you know, in the general constipation care, it was thought, oh, you know, you shouldn't use suppositories that frequently. Well, I found that, you know, keeping people regular was better for their system than any issue that might arise from using regular use of suppositories. And the last is enemas. Now, large enemas are highly discouraged except for occasional use. There's called mini enemas, which really is just a little bit of fluid with the irritant, and they usually, you can buy them on the internet in bulk. That's usually, my patients have said that that's the most cost-effective way to use them, and some people use them every 2 days, and some people use them every 3 days. That would be something you would talk about with your provider, and they can be very effective in helping you have a normal bowel movement, or what would be a normal bowel movement for you, and then you could just go on with your life. And people find that, you know, they don't find that after using them, they continue to go throughout the day. You know, it just keeps them regular and keeps them feeling well, because anyone who's ever been constipated knows how lousy it can make you feel. The last thing I want to talk about is fecal incontinence. This is probably the most distressing of any of the issues that we've talked about. Again, it often benefits from the same management techniques, having enough fluid but not you know, an overexorbitance of fluid, having fiber, which slows down, because fiber regulates. Fiber is probably more effective for some people that have fecal incontinence because it slows down and therefore more water is drawn out of the feces, and so it becomes more bulky, and having more bulk makes it more difficult to just pass through involuntary through the anal sphincter. Avoiding irritants, dairy for some people can be a real problem. This, a diary, a food diary, can be very, very critical for people and can really offer a lot of insight. For some people, I found some people find that low evacuation of the lower bowel helps. You know, I have one person that I helped with this, and you know, we worked on a lot of things, and they found that there were certain things that seemed to stimulate their fecal incontinence. And so what they did was, before participating in these activities where they were bearing down, they, you know, used a mini enema, not on a daily basis, but they were using a mini enema, and that helped evacuate the lower bowel, and then they didn't have incontinence. Person at this point, too, should probably be, could be evaluated by a gastroenterologist who can actually look at the sphincter tone, and to see if the problem is with the actual, the anal sphincter not being strong enough in order to maintain the feces in the bowel until you want to voluntarily evacuate it. So my last slide is, the central challenge facing persons with MS is to find a place for the illness while keeping the illness in the place. I always end my presentation with this slide, just a food for thought. I will ask Dawn to please open up the line for questions, and I hope that this has been of help to all of you. Dawn? I don't know how I get her.
Yes, no, I'm here.
I figured you were listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Oh, here we go. Our first question is from Denise. Denise, please go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm actually friends with someone who has MS. I work in a nursing home, and she lives here. And she has a problem where she feels like she has to go, but she feels like it won't release. And then she also had recently where they had given her a suppository, and it didn't do anything.
And
so I guess two questions, I guess.
Yeah, when you say she won't release, I'm assuming bowel or bladder?
Bowel.
Bowel?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, you'd have to know first is if she, when the last time she evacuated, because she may be having pressure and really not have any stool to evacuate. So you would want to check first to see when the last time she evacuated her bowel. And then I would suggest if a suppository didn't do anything, I would try a mini enema. And as long as she has not, and as long as she hasn't been more than 3 days, I wouldn't be concerned. If she's been more than 3 days and she has this feeling, you know, she might need a digital exam to see if there is impacted stool. I probably would do that before I gave an enema. You know, a nurse could do that where she's in a facility. That would be very easy for someone to see if she has impacted stool. She may need to be disimpacted. And then if none of those things resolve it, and she has not been having bowel movements, and she continues to have this feeling of pressure, I definitely, that would be cause to be evaluated by a physician at that point. So I hope that answered your question. And our next question?
Our next question is from Judy. Judy, please go ahead.
Judy?
Hello?
Hi, Judy. No, that's Dawn.
Okay. Our next question is from Terry.
Okay. Hello, Terry.
Oh, I don't have a question.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't have a question, but everything has been useful thus far.
Very good. Thank you for that comment. I appreciate it. That's the one bad thing about doing teleconferences. I can't see any faces. I have no idea if you're falling asleep or if you're following my train of thought.
Okay. Our next question is from Janie.
Hi. I am bedridden and highly incontinent, both front and back, and I get a lot of bed sores and stuff because of that, including dead tissue. So I'm told by the nurses to turn on my side, you know, off the infected areas, which helps bed sores. But it makes me urinate so heavily on the left when I turn left. Is there a reason going left makes you void more or have more bowel movements? I don't understand that. It only happens on the left side.
No, well, the left for the bowel, the way it descends, can make it easier to evacuate the bowel, but shouldn't the bladder, unless the bowel is full and pressing against the bladder, I hate to be devil's advocate, but since you've had such incontinence problems, I mean, have you ever considered a catheter for your urinary incontinence?
Had that done to me a couple of times, and it wasn't a very good experience. I've got very small sphincters for one, and I even tried to go on Detrol, I think it was.
Yeah.
They said I wasn't the candidate for it. I was tested for that, and so decided just to go with diapers and whatever. And the bed sores are getting under control. Like I said, going to the other side seems to be working out. I'm having a visiting nurse service come to me and evaluate me several times a week, and I have a home aide now that helps me.
Yeah.
I wanted to say also I really learned so much from all the comments that you were making tonight about different things.
Thank you.
I had no idea, like, for instance, that baclofen affects the bowels. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I'm on
that. A lot of people don't. I'd like to bring up a good point, though, I'd like to share. For people that, you know, urinary incontinence is an ongoing issue and who may not be candidates to self-catheterize due to immobility or other maybe manual dexterity, if you have tremors in your hand, you know, something we don't often talk about is suprapubic catheters, where the catheter is inserted, you know, through the lower abdominal, you know, wall right into the bladder, and then the catheter comes out that way. And that can be very effective for someone who is having difficulties like this woman in keeping her dry and clean. And there was always the concern about increased risk of infection, but, you know, there have been a number of studies that have shown with good care and good, again, bladder hygiene, they, especially with a suprapubic catheter, they do not have to have an increased risk of infection. With a regular catheter in through the urethra, because especially for a woman, because the position is so close to the rectum, you know, without good cleaning, et cetera, you may have increased infection. But suprapubic catheters should be considered for these type of cases. Okay, Don.
Our next question is from Christy.
Okay, Christy. Hi, Christy.
Hello, Christy.
Hi.
Okay. Our next question is from Carol. Carol, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I've had MS for 31 years now, and I'm still, you know, I'm active. I've had bladder incontinence probably for maybe about 10 years or so, getting gradually worse. I deal with it. But bowel, fecal incontinence has been something the last year or two, and that I find troubling. And thinking about what you're talking about today, I realize that it only happens in the morning. and usually I have orange juice, and I'll have cereal, I'll have coffee. And often I cannot get from the kitchen to the bathroom.
Make it in time, huh?
In time, yeah. So that probably is something I need to look at as to what I'm doing as far as irritants or food. But the question is, are there exercises, like there's a Kegel exercise that I do for the bladder. Is there anything that you can do for the bowel sphincter?
Well, it's funny because a lot of people, when they're trying to do their Kegel exercises, actually, you know, actually inadvertently tighten their anal sphincter. I'm not sure how effective that is. I imagine it helps some. But I know that there are actually physical therapists, if you are deemed to have a weakened anal sphincter, I believe they use biofeedback with a probe and do specific exercises to isolate that muscle and to tighten it. But it's a very specialized field. I know that there was one physical therapist in Rhode Island somewhere that one of my patients had gone to, and it was helped a real lot. It's out there, but I'm just not sure how available it is, and it is specialized. It's not something like I could tell you over the phone that you could do that would help.
Right. I did have a gastroenterologist tell me that there was no way to strengthen the sphincter, so he wasn't too encouraging. But I'm definitely going to be keeping track of, you know, what I'm eating or drinking in the morning and how that's affecting it.
Yeah, especially where, you know, you've got such a pinpointed time of day, you know.
Yeah. I'm regular. I go to the bathroom every morning, you know.
Yeah, it makes you really believe that is correlated, that you could help that by getting rid of something, at least one of the offenders.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, our next question comes from Dario.
Dario?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, fine.
My battery's about to go dead, that's why I ask.
Okay.
The evacuation of the bowels. Unintended. I notice I lose the ability to walk.
When you're constipated?
After I go, I have difficulty walking. So I don't know if it's related to spinal things or what.
Yeah. I'm not really sure that I have an answer for that question. Is that something you've talked about with your provider?
Well, not lately. It happened, you know, that's why I don't look forward to evacuating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since I know that it'll end up being something where I collapse and have difficulty standing up straight.
Now, are you having to bear down very hard in order to evacuate your bowel?
No, it just goes. These are times when they talk about constipation with MS, but these are times when I just evacuate, you know.
Involuntarily?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway.
I think that's definitely something that you should review with your provider, because okay. I think that there may be something more to the story.
Oh. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you know, you shouldn't be collapsing on the floor.
Okay. Our next question is from Dorothy.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Great. Yeah, I have the urgency and the overflow problem.
Mm-hmm.
I also have some bladder problems, but I'm glad you told me about the Botox. that it causes constipation, because I didn't know that. And I also, I'm one of the people who, if I travel, I do not drink or eat that day. If I fly or if I'm traveling for more than 2 hours, I will not until I get to my destination.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry. I had a little emergency at my house. So you, I don't get your question.
So, I know, and I had the question, and I forgot with all this. All right, is it? Can you get back to me? I'm sorry. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, can you get back to me? I'm sorry. I had the question, and now I forgot it.
Well, the call is just about done.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry.
That's fine. Oh, that's what I wanted to ask. I'm sorry. About the Botox in-home catheterization. Now, you said I would have to get my the doctor would just have to evaluate me for those?
Yes. A urologist.
A urologist. Okay, I do have one. All right.
Yeah, you would need a referral to a urologist because urologists are the only ones that are trained to give the Botox for the bladder.
Okay, okay. And there's no type of surgery, anything that could help that?
Well, I mean, there are surgical interventions, but you want to go with the least invasive option possible first.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that is true, but... You know, I'm a young woman, I'm 45, and I just have these issues with going out and wearing of the diapers. It's like,
right.
You know, I'm just trying to think what could happen. But I also have some bowel issues, too, but your points were good, and they helped me, so I thank you for that.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me, Christine?
Hello? Amy, Dawn, are we done?
I'm here. Did you want to take another question or?
Yeah, it's fine with me if.
Okay. Next question is from Rhonda.
Christine, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, my. I'm going to unmute my line for like the last 5 minutes. I'm so sorry, but I don't know what happened. But we can only take, we'll take one more question and then we're going to wrap up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry about that.
Can you hear me? I'm Rhonda.
Okay, Rhonda, I can hear you.
Hi, Christine. I know you. I'm Rhonda from Rhode Island. We miss you at the functions.
Thank you.
Anyhow, I have a couple of comments before my actual question, just to kind of reiterate some of the things you said. When I started self-catheterizing like over a dozen years ago, I was hesitant at first, and I'm even an RN. But when I did it and they taught me how, oh, I said if I only had balance, I would shout from the rooftops. That is the best thing to do. You know, you just go before you go out shopping or whatever, and you do not have to worry about that incontinence problem. It's a wonderful thing. So I encourage anybody listening, you know, if they're thinking about it and they're hesitant, to please go ahead with it. So I just wanted to give a little personal thing there. And also with the bowel, because I have both problems, that the digital stimulation is extremely effective. When things are already in your rectum, you can kind of help them come out. But my question, Christine, would be, I recently increased my baclofen because my stiffness in my legs was getting worse. And what ended up happening is my urinary stuff, which has been so under control with my Detrol and Detropan and self-cathing, all of a sudden I would have to go, and then I would go. So I've been, like, being incontinent. So I backed up to the normal dose of baclofen I was on, and it's still happening with my bladder. So, you know, I'm not sure if you have any input on that.
Are you, you know, that leads you to believe that it was probably just circumstantial that those two things happened at the same time?
Oh.
Any, you know, I mean, you know the drill. Any chance you got an infection?
I know. That's tomorrow. I'm dropping off a urine for UTI.
I mean,
to see for UTI, because I talked to my neurologist, Dr. Martin, and he said after a few days of getting back to my normal dose, I should have been okay.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So I just was. It just seems like so frustrating to me. I've never had it where I don't have any urge. All of a sudden, I get an urge, and then I'm being incontinent, and it's making me nuts.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Very good. But, I tuned in a teensy bit late, but your comments have just been right on, and I think it's extremely helpful for anybody with either problem, which I happen to have both. And I think it's been a great teleconference. And
well, thank
plus
you.
You always do a great job anyway.
From such a knowledgeable MS patient, I take it very nicely to heart. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's good to hear from you again, and it was wonderful.
Okay, take care.
Okay, thanks, Christine.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, everybody. If you had a question and you didn't get a chance to ask it, please either contact, obviously, your provider or the MS Society, your local chapter, and we will try to get you some answers. And thank you so much, Christine, for your help tonight in explaining some of these tough issues. I hope everyone enjoyed the call. This series continues on May 8th with a teleconference on sex and intimacy, and on June 12th on improving independence in progressive MS. Contact your chapter at 1-800-FIGHT-MS to register for these teleconferences if you're not already. I'm going to ask you all to please stay on the line to answer 5 questions about this program. Your input helps us to improve programs and better meet your needs in the future. Operator?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the polling portion of your call. Our first question, as a result of participating in this teleconference, I learned at least one new thing about bladder problems and MS. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Again, I learned at least one new thing about bladder problems and MS. Please hold while the results are being tallied. Okay, our next question. I learned at least one new thing about bowel problems in MS. One for agree, 2 for disagree, 3 for no opinion. Again, I learned at least one new thing about bowel problems in MS. Please hold while the results are being tallied. Okay, our next question. I can identify at least one new strategy to better treat or manage a bladder or bowel problem. One for agree, 2 for disagree, 3 for no opinion. Again, I can identify at least one new strategy to better treat or manage a bladder or bowel problem. One for agree, 2 for disagree, 3 for no opinion. Please hold while we re-tally the results. Okay, Our next question. I plan to talk to my physician about at least one thing I heard today. 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, 3 for no opinion. Again, I plan to talk to my physician about at least one thing I learned or heard today. One moment while we tally the results. Okay, our last question. I am more likely to register for other teleconferences because I like this learning format. 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, 3 for no opinion. Again, I am more likely to register for other teleconferences because I like this learning format. Telling the results. Okay, this concludes the polling portion of the call.
All right. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.